So we are studying the book of Deuteronomy, also known as the book of words. We've talked about numbers in this class, the book of wilderness. And so we're looking at the book of words. Can anybody sum up, what are we, the book of Deuteronomy, if we were to give it just a quick summary, do you remember kind of what's happening, what's going on right now in the book of Deuteronomy? Do you all remember? I'm sorry? Moses is about to leave them. That's right. He's on the cusp of being gone. Yes, very, very good. He's refreshing them in all the information they should know. And why would we want to refresh this particular group? Do you remember? I'm sorry? Well, they forget quickly. Yes.
Second generation.
Yeah, they're the second generation. Yeah. I forget sometimes things also. But yeah, and this is the second generation. They need a re-giving of the law. And that's basically what the Latin translation of this is, the second law. And so there's a re-giving of the Ten Commandments that we talked about last Sunday. And Moses is going over a lot of the same kind of things as he mentioned to them earlier. And he talks about Horeb, and we'll see that again today. What are some other things that we're talking about in Deuteronomy? Where are they physically? Where right now? Do you remember an encampment? Where are they encamped physically right now? Right outside the Promised Land, right? They're just across the Jordan River, basically parallel with Jericho, okay? And we know that the fear of the Lord is in, the fear of the people is in the land of the Canaanites. Everybody is scared of them right now. And so God, that's something that God had put the fear into him. And so that is something that it's taking place. And so they're on the cusp, and Moses gives them basically four sermons. This is four lessons that Moses is giving to them. And we're in the middle of the second lesson, and that began in chapter 5. And so we are now, we'll be studying basically chapter 7 through 9 this morning. But I want to kind of go over, when we talked about chapter 6 is a pivotal, very important chapter in the book of Deuteronomy, especially because of the chapter verses 4 through 9 give us what is called the Shema, or the hear, or listen, Israel. Listen, Israel. It's a very important passage in the Jewish community, in Jewish culture. It was important for them. It was part of a prayer that was prayed twice daily. And so this is a very, very important piece of passage for us. But it really lays out the concept and the importance of passing on what we know, passing on the knowledge to next generations and future generations. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning of verse 4, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." Have you heard that somewhere before? All right. When Jesus was asked the greatest commandment, he went here. That lawyer went to this passage, and Jesus said, "You've said well." He says in verse 6, "These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart." And you'll hear that over and over and over again in Deuteronomy. Put these things on your heart. Put them on your heart. And that's something that nobody can take away from you. You know, you can't burn that out of your heart. You can't destroy that out of your heart. And we see that much later on in the future in people who were faithful despite the odds. And you see that with Daniel and his companions when they're in captivity. In Daniel chapter 1, and that they purposed in their hearts that they would not eat the king's food because this message was in their hearts. And so that is a very important concept that Moses tries to get them to understand. You've got to put it in your heart. It's got to be a part of how you move. It's got to be a part of how you live. My grandfather is a preacher and grew up listening to him. And he's sort of one of those old-timey preachers. He would say that, you know, he's, well, I can't tell you what he'd say about himself, but anyway, it's, he always had his little colloquialisms from growing up in South Texas. And he used to say, put as much Bible into you as possible, so that if somebody pokes you in the belly, Bible comes out. And that's the concept. Put as much in your heart, the Word of God, so that's what comes out. When we look at all the different ways and all the different medias and all the different sources that we're just putting stuff into our heads, into our hearts, it's easy to fill those things up with just junk, right? It's surprisingly now how, like, with, are you familiar with Vines and all the different media outlets that you can just put like 15-second pieces of junk? It's like, you know, the gas station junk food. You know what I'm talking about? How many cross-country travelers? Cross-country traveling, 7-Eleven coffee, and the packaged bear claw thing. I don't know, you know. And when you're done with your trip, you're like, oh, I don't feel so good. But that's the social junk that's out there, you know. But if we're putting God into our hearts, it makes a huge difference. And so Moses, you'll see that over and over again. Put this in your heart. It shall be on your heart. And then it's something personal. And then verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your sons. And he goes into talking about when you're talking. What is he saying here? When is a time to talk about God with your children? With always is basically what he's putting forth for us, right? Always. It is always the right time. And you know, as parents and grandparents, those teachable moments. You know, when it's time to talk about and capitalize on an opportunity. And so those are these things that we need to be doing always and passing it on to future generations. And again, that's another theme that you'll see throughout Deuteronomy. And when you get to the end of Joshua, the book of Joshua, there arose a generation who forgot. And so anyway, here's this the importance that this section of Scripture really gives us. It's quite a gem here in the book of Deuteronomy. And so I wanted to kind of go over that again, just to reiterate the importance of this particular passage in passing on to future generations, passing on the faith that's already supposed to be in your heart. How do we get it into our children's hearts? We teach it over and over and over and over again, but we live it also. We live it in front of them. And so it's very important that they see it and hear it, just like we see Moses talking to them, and he says, you saw and you heard God. You saw what he did in Egypt. You saw what he did with you on Horeb. You saw and you heard. And children need to see that same thing from us. Future generations need to see that same thing from us. As a younger guy growing, a lot of my learning came from people in this room in some things. Some just spiritual applications from you guys. Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's exactly right. Did you hear what she was saying? Making God a part of the family. And so it's not awkward to talk about those things. And when we start new things, you know, it's many who are new families come to the church and they want to start talking about God and the family. And it may be a little awkward. That's not a subject we've talked about as a family. But the more and more you do it, the more and more he's part of the family. And the more and more that's something that's just normal to talk about. When I was growing up, it was normal, you know, to say, what does the Bible say about that? That was just normal conversation. And so it was weird whenever you were with other people that didn't think that way. And Josiah and Vivian aren't in here. We, you know, play dates. Are you familiar with what play dates are? When moms get together and kids play and that kind of stuff, whatever. So Kara had one of those with a lady who their family was were atheists, basically. And the kids are playing, and God came up, you know, missionary children, God's going to come up. And the girls that Josiah and Vivian are playing with said, we don't believe in God. And Josiah and Vivian about had a come on, and they're like, how do you not believe in God? And Josiah immediately went into evidence arguments. How do you know you have a heart? Who do you think made that? You know, that kind of stuff. And here are two different children, two different households, raised very differently. And for Josiah and Vivian, what do you mean you don't believe in God? And Josiah and Vivian were upset that they didn't believe in God. And they were like crying about it. And Kara was like, I'm sorry. They've just never been around people that don't believe in God. How do you answer that, really? I mean, sorry, we've never been around you kind of people. And so, but you've got to put it in their hearts early, early. And that passage that when they are old, they shall not depart. Doesn't really say anything about the middle part, right, friend? But when they're old, they shall not. So it's important that, and it's important for Moses to teach that. You've got to get it in their hearts. You've got to get it there. You've got to make it real. And so chapter 7, as we transition into chapter 7, we have this chapter is like the leading of God, God leading them. And so we're going to go over some things that they've talked about or seen before. But these first few verses, 1 through 11, he talks about some warnings to them. Again, warnings. And so it's and this is a pattern. Stay true to God, because if you don't, this is going to happen. It's sort of the formula a lot in Deuteronomy. And you've seen already, so that it may be well with you. That it may be well with you, which basically means so you don't die. So in this situation, we have some warnings here. And he says, when the Lord your God, beginning of verse 1, when the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it and clears away the many nations before you. Who's doing this? God. The Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, seven nations greater and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them before you to defeat them, you shall utterly destroy them, and you shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them. Verse 4, for they will turn your sons away from following me. Don't marry with them, in verse 3. Don't intermingle with them. Don't have anything to do with them, because they will turn you away from God. And that's true, even in relationships today. It's very important, vitally important, who we choose to marry. In this situation, he says, they will turn you away from God to serve other gods, and anger will come upon them. In verse 6, this is why, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. And again, this concept that you are mine, you are my possession, and you are a holy people. You can't just do whatever you want to do. And later on, we're going to see some blessings that come from being a holy people, beloved by God. But here's the things that we have to do if we're going to be those holy people. And so that requires something on our part to be those holy people that he would want us to be. And he says in verse 7, the Lord did not set his love on you, nor choose you, because you are more number than any other peoples, for you are fewest of all the peoples. He said, you weren't that special that I chose you. You weren't some great nation. You're actually just this little raggedy nation, but I made promises, and that's what he says, because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore to your fathers. He said, I made a promise, and I kept that promise. And again, that theme goes throughout. God is faithful. Another theme in the book of Deuteronomy, God is faithful. God remembers. You better not forget, because God remembers his oath, and God completes his oath. And so he says here, that is why. And he says in verse 9, know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to a thousandth generation with those who love him and keep his commandments. Why is it important to love God and keep his commandments? That it may be, what? It is the whole duty of man. Why is it important for us to love God and keep his commandments? Short answer, that it may be well with you. But what blessings, and we're going to see that in just a second, what blessings we get from being a part of God's family, from being plugged in with God and him being a part of us. And so we need to keep those commandments. But, in verse 10, but he repays those who hate him to their faces to destroy them. And he will not delay with those who who hate him, and he will repay him to his face. So you got either or, right? I mean, Moses really lays out a black and white picture here. This is not a, yeah, there's those gray people, right? So there's really a black and white picture here of good or bad. You're either hot or cold. And I think gray is even worse, right? When you read the book of Revelation and then see the letters that were written to the churches, I would rather you hot or cold, but you're lukewarm, that's even worse, right? It means you know what you should be doing, but you're not doing it. That's even worse. So here's a situation that we need to make sure that we're keeping God's commands, love Him, keep His commandments. And how do we show that we love Him? How do we show our love to God? By obeying. And you are all saying that. By obeying God. And children respect parents by obeying and paying attention to them. And so it's the same situation here. In verse 12, we begin this promises of God, this section where he talks about some blessings. He says, "Then it shall come about, because you listen to the judgments and keep and do them, and the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your fathers." And look in verse 13. "He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will bless the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your ground, your grain, your new wine, and your oil, the increase of your herd, the young of your flock, and the land which he swore to your fathers, your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There will be no male or female barren among your cattle. The Lord will remove from you all sickness, and he will not put on you the harmful diseases of Egypt, which you have known, but he will lay them all on all who hate you, and you shall consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for what would be that would be a snare for you." So serve God, obey God, and here are the blessings that you would receive. They're going into a promised land, and we're going to see that. And for us, why do we want to study Deuteronomy? Why do we want to study this book? What application does it have to us today?
Show when you get to do wrong, he's going to take care of
it. Yes, there is a consequence for wrongdoing. That's exactly right. Mickey? Yes, exactly. And so it's personal responsibility. It's a concept that we need to obey God. It's concepts that are transferred into the New Testament also. What about there's a lot of parallels between a promised land and a promised rest, right? What are we talking about there? What are we dealing with there? It was not, no, not in this we're talking about a physical promised land, you know, literal milk and honey kind of situation for them. But how does that transfer into an imagery or symbolism for us? I'm sorry? We are promised a rest. And that's something that, you know, you're studying Hebrews in here. And chapter 11 in Hebrews talks about people who never finished, never received, never saw the promise, but they were waiting for a promise. They were waiting for a land. And he said if it was a physical land, they could have gone back to a physical land. Yes, Fran.
You know what's really cool about this? It gives you something while you're waiting.
Yeah.
You don't have to just go without until you get to heaven. Mm-hmm. You get something while you're waiting.
Yes. Yes, and that is true. We are blessed. We are blessed by God, and so it's not that we are necessarily suffering here necessarily, in most cases. But we're on the edge. You are on the edge of a spiritual promise. As you read Deuteronomy, keep in mind that you are still in the wilderness. You are still on the edge to cross over Jordan. We sing those songs, "I don't have to cross Jordan alone." That's the concept we're talking about right here. Do not forget that. Do not forget that. You're still waiting. We haven't gotten in there yet. So as you read through Deuteronomy, look at these passages and realize that God is still talking to us today. Don't forget to do these very things. Do not forget the goodness of the Lord in our lives. And please teach them to future generations. And so as we get into this, keep that in mind. Keep that in the back of your head. Yes, he's talking to a specific people. Yes, he's talking to a specific time. But it still rings true for us today. We're still waiting to cross Jordan. And so that's something that we need to keep in mind as we read through this book. Look in verse 17. He always does this back and forth. But he says, "If you should say in your heart, 'These nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them?' Or how can I cast them out? It's too big for me. I can't do it." Which they have done before, right? They've done that before. And he says, "If you should say that, you shall not be afraid of them. And you shall well remember that the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt." Remember what God did to Pharaoh, who was a great nation, who was your captor. Remember Egypt. Remember the battles won. Prayer, people talk about prayer lists and things like that. Remember the battles God's won for you. When you go up against a battle, when you've gone into a situation where it's too big for me, and God's going to say, "Yeah, it probably is if you're doing this by yourself," but you're not. Remember the battles you've won in life when you get up to battles that are very fortified. When you think, "I can't do it, it's too big for me." He says, "Remember Egypt," and so don't forget. And he says, "So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples to whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish." And so even the ones that are hiding in the hidey holes are going to die from hornets. I would not want to die that way. So verse 21, "You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God." And that's another theme. God is with them. God is with them. And that's what he said last time. Ask creation, ask of all time, has this ever happened? Has this ever happened, that God would be with you? I would be in your midst. And he said, and the answer was no. And the Lord your God will clear away those nations before you little by little. And this is an interesting note. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. What is he talking about here? So they're supposed to go into this nation and dispossess, or into this land. And these are not like, when they say nations, these are like Greek city-states. And so you have a large city and a king of that city and the influence that it has. And then so you have various cities. So it's not one great nation. These people aren't, you know, seven nations are not unified in any way. And so they're going to go in and just start, you know, like 18 holes of golf. Okay, so they're just going to plug through, you know, the promised land. Or disc golf, right, Bible? Not paying attention. So anyway, so here's... So here's what we're going to be, they're going to be just chipping away at this. Why would he say, "Because the beasts of the field will be too many for you"? What do you think? That's kind of weird, right? Have you ever seen a road that hasn't been used very long? And grass starts growing right up through asphalt. But if people are living there and using it, it seems to last longer, right? People, you know, there's a little insignificant things you do day to day, keep up with things. If they were to go in and just, you know, blitzkrieg across the all those nations and just drive them all out and just march along, they'd come back to, oh, they'd have to completely rebuild everything. And in some cases they do, because they burn the cities. But so God is saying, even he's very being very smart with him, at least telling them, do it little by little so you can possess the land as you go, and so you're not having completely rebuild. And so that's kind of the concepts that he's telling him here. And in verse 24, he says, "He will deliver their kings into your hand so that he will make their name perish from under heaven." Their names will perish from under heaven. What does it mean? What does that mean? Their names shall perish from under heaven.
It won't be
They will not be remembered. How many of you know of these seven nations, have heard of them before until the Bible mentions them? Any of them? The Hittites? Did you know? I'm sorry? That's right. There are a few that we don't know, that we have never heard of. And so much so that the Hittites, the one archaeologist said, well, the Bible's incorrect because they're talking about the Hittite nation that never existed. And he wrote a whole book about how the Bible is wrong because of the Hittites. And do you know that later on, just a few years later, after he published his book saying that, you know, this will destroy the Bible and the Bible will no longer be sold because my book is so awesome. A few years later, some German archaeologists found the Hittite nation, found the capital city of the Hittite nation, found so much of their language that they were able to put together a Hittite dictionary. That's the kind of stuff where God says, all right, here's this. You think you're so smart, I'm going to give these German guys this little find. And all of a sudden, oh, there were Hittites. But he said right here, what did he say? I will make you forget that they even existed. That's how I'm going to destroy them. History will no longer remember them. And you know they still find cities? Whole civilizations that were just lost. Just lost. No concept. Their language, everything just gone. They have no idea how. And they're trying to figure out. I watched a whole series of, I geek like that and watch archaeological shows. But anyway, so, and they wonder, how can a civilization be lost? How can a civilization be lost? God. Okay? God. That's how that's going to happen. And that's what he says right here. You will destroy them. But, he says, remember, do not take their gods, all their idols. And when we think about idols, we think of like this big, huge thing, like a fat Buddha or something like that. Well, that's what we think of idols, right? It wasn't necessarily that. It wasn't necessarily that. Because the houses had house gods and had their little images. You know, they had them, little teeny tiny things and huge, huge things, okay? So you weren't even able to bring like the little ones as a trinket. Ho, 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 we got this. This is my little, you know, my souvenir from AI, right? Souvenirs could get you in trouble, okay? Yes. Yeah, and that's what he says. These are banned things. That's the word that's used in this text. These are banned items. This is contraband. You can't bring them in. I know they're cute or whatever. It's, you know, let the kids play with them. But it's not anything that you can bring into the camp. These are banned things. You are a holy people. You can't bring them in. They're not action figures. So that's what he's saying as far as, so when we think idols, they're not necessarily these big, huge things. They can be just these little house idols or fertility gods that a lot of places had. So do not bring them in to the camp. Chapter 8, we begin looking at God's gracious dealings with the people. And again, Moses goes over and over again, the commandments I'm giving you. He says, all the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your fathers. He says, be careful to do what I'm telling you. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years. Remember the wilderness. So remember Egypt. The lessons learned in Egypt, remember the wilderness. Remember the things that you learned in the wilderness. They saw the death of those who did not obey God. They saw those things. And he says, the way your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep the commandments or not. Whether or not you would keep the commandments. We are still in our wilderness time. We are still in our wilderness time. And it's interesting, there is this concept that they were sort of purified in the desert. They come out of Egypt, and I've said this before, they're coming out of Egypt with Egypt, you know, not Georgia, but Egypt on their mind, okay? So they have that concept stuck in their heads of worshiping a god. And they come into the desert, and God is just washing Egypt out of them, okay? And then he brings them into, with what he has left, brings them into the promised land. And so a lot of times when we have people coming out of the world, coming into God, into the church, there is a renewal, there has to be a renewal of concepts of God. What was your concept of God, or your concept of religion, or your concept of the church before you became a Christian? Was it the same? Was it different? Did it need to be tweaked here and there? You know, a lot of what we're doing in mission work and a lot of things we do are taking people out of a denominationalism. And you'll see people coming in this building doing things you're like, wow, I didn't know we needed to do that. Or saying things a little bit differently because they're not familiar with how to worship God. They're not familiar with the right concept of God. And so you're bringing them out of the world, you're bringing them out of false concepts and trying to correct them. And so Egypt was, or the wilderness was that time for those people to correct concepts of God. And now they knew about God, they knew the stories about God, but they had never dwelt that closely with Him. They had never been a holy people like that. So any questions? I'm seeing some confused. Yes? Welcome to the human element. No, it's fine. That is a human. Why don't we? Why don't we? And that is always the case. I know. So the question was, if people saw, even the nations saw around them what God was doing with Israel, why wouldn't they bow down and be obedient to God? Why wouldn't they? If people saw the goodness of God, if people saw what God was doing, why wouldn't we be more obedient? Yes, and people have their own concepts of what's right. And they will believe, in the end, people will do and believe what they want to do. And a lot of it comes down to emotional things, because you can talk rationalism and arguments in people's faces until you pass out. But they're hanging on to some emotional click or something going on that happened or whatever. So there's sometimes no rhyme to reason why people will do the things they do. And people will say, well, that's just the right thing to do. Well, they don't necessarily know what the right thing to do is. Yes? Yes. Yes, and that's part of it, too. And that's part of that emotional thing. I'm not worthy to be even near God. And you know, the centurion who prayed and said, no, you don't even, I'm not worthy. You just pray, and I know that you just say what you need to say where you are, and it'll be done. You know, we see that concept. I am unworthy. I'm an unclean man amongst unclean people with Isaiah. There's a sense of unworthiness. And so, yes, that is a case. And that's that emotional side where we don't feel we're worthy. And so we've got to believe God saying, yes, you're worthy. I bought you a long time ago. And so, yes, that's something we have to fight against sometimes, too, is people's self-concept. I think a wrong self-concept. And so it's not only people's concept of God that needs to change, but it's their concept of self in relationship to God. That's a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. And so those are things we fight, those battles. Yes, sir?
Also, the same as it is today, in some ways, it was easier and more fun sometimes to worship their gods.
Well, yeah, of course. It's just more fun. And we, again, we fight that battle, this concept of we are spiritual beings in physical containers, and sometimes it's more fun to do the physical things than it is to do the spiritual things that would please God.
Which is also why the Israelites themselves were drawn over to the other side so often.
Oh yeah, with the Moabite women and that kind of stuff, sure, and all their practices, I'm sure it was fun, but it wasn't something that would please God. And they're not thinking, and a lot of, when we think fun and physical, we're thinking very short game. And that's one thing we got to get in our minds, that when we think about just the physical side, well, I just want to be happy. I just need to do what makes me happy. And everybody around you says, oh, do what makes you happy. Do what makes you happy, right? That's short game, right? That is pleasure of sin for a season. That's like this, you know, and there, here's eternity. Okay, so yeah, do what makes you feel happy. Yes, sir. Yes, yeah, that doesn't represent him. Yeah, you're exactly right. And do y'all hear what he's saying as far as We need to make sure, and that's exactly what Moses is saying. Moses isn't talking to like people that don't know God. Moses is talking to people who are Christians, quote unquote, right? Not really. I'm just saying for metaphor. Okay. So you need to make sure that you're keeping everything in line. That's a very good point. We can sit here and say, oh, well, we're so good. We're so righteous. You know, I give my tithes and I do this. And Jesus talked to those people, right? What did Jesus say to those very same people who thought, oh God, you're so lucky to have me. I'm not like that publican. I'm so righteous. Yes, he calls them fools. He calls them a lot of things. He calls them a lot of things. Jesus said some things to them. And so those things do not please God. A self-righteousness does not please God. But when he says, when you were in the land, he humbled them. What does God want? Humility, a contrite heart. That's what God wants, to serve him. Because humility can learn and humility can teach others. Self-righteousness is a stiff-necked person who's already fine the way they are and will be punished just like those who they think they are not. And he said in verse 3, he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor your fathers knew, and that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. I've heard that somewhere before. To the Jewish people, pure religion comes from the desert. Pure religion comes from the wilderness. Why would that be the case? Where do they learn about God? In the desert, in the wilderness. Remember Horeb. When Jesus was baptized, where did he go? He went to the wilderness. Sorry, I must not have had enough breakfast or something. But this concept of knowing God is so important. So important. Know God. Remember Horeb. Do not forget him. You live and breathe by God. And so Moses is pleading with them, do not forget. Do not forget. And this is a powerful message throughout the book of Deuteronomy. It doesn't get any lighter. But this concept that he's pleading with them, because he knows, he's already told them 3 times, I'm not going to go in there with you. I'm not going to make it. Don't forget God. Do not leave him. And this is what he's done with you. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God is disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Right out there beside there, Hebrews 12, 4 through 17. You'll study that with David later on, so I won't go into that. But here's this concept. God loves you because he disciplines you. You love your children because you correct them. You love your grandchildren because you give them sugar and that kind of stuff. But I mean, you still correct them. Because you love them. Because they've got to know that there is Lord. That God is Lord. That he rules our lives. And that we're still in the wilderness. We're not there yet. We've got to make it through. And so he talks about the good land that he's going to give them. Verses 7 through 10. And he says, in the end, after talking about this great land that he's going to give them, he says, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments. In verse 14, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord because you have all these houses that you didn't build and that kind of stuff, and you're going to forget about God. And that's really easy to do, right? Stuff makes us forget God. And it's really easy to do. I think we'll have to stop there because we're about out of time. But read through the 8 and 9. Well, let's just finish 9. I think we've got a few minutes. Let's just finish 8 right here. He says, he led you, in verse 15, he led you through the great terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions, thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness he fed you manna, which you fathers did not know, that he might humble you, that he might test you to do good in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and strength of my hand made this wealth. And in the end, we need to make sure that we understand that we do not have anything that God has not given us, But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who is giving you power to make wealth. Has that changed? Has that changed? It has not. That He may confirm His covenant with which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day, it shall come out. They come about if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them. I testify against you today that you will surely perish, like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you. So shall you perish because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. Again, he says this back and forth. Do this, it's going to be awesome. Don't do it, and you will die. You got awesome or death. That's basically what you've got with God, okay? And that's not changed. And remember where all these things come from. All our great wealth comes from God. Any questions, comments before we close? Yes, sir. Exactly. So, and that's part of that also, because they're getting all the livestock and everything from them also. So exactly right. Very good. Thank you very much for your time this morning.